This week on the show, we interview Hillary Sloan, the dog mom of internet famous dog Ella Bean. We discuss how to get started in the world of pet influencing, what it's like having a famous dog, and how Ella reacts every time someone pulls out a camera. Plus, we have an exclusive chat with the Pet Collective's very own Georgie. She gives us a peek behind the curtain of the Pet Collective's online presence and how we source our awesome content.
If you don't like humans, that's understandable. I'd rather spend time with my furry animal. It's the Pet Collective, yeah.
Hey, I'm Allison Seeke.
And I'm Kyle Kittleson.
Welcome back to the Pet Collective. This is the podcast for pet parents and the pet obsessed. Kyle, how many pet influencers do you follow on Instagram?
Oh, probably not that many.
Why?
I know. I think I'm just more into following my own dog. Even the other night,
like,
she was laying next to me.
Or
yeah, like I follow my dog on Instagram. And even when, like, yesterday we're laying down and I'm scrolling through pictures of her, but she's laying down next to me. Like, I have the thing, but I'm looking at pictures of her, you know?
Same.
So I'm just
like
so
to her. Yeah. I'm like, do you see yourself? You're so cute.
Yeah, so I'm pretty, that takes up a lot of my time. I don't know if I have time to follow another, you know, big time influencer. But this interview that we have today is great with Hillary Sloan and Ella Coconut and Fifi Bean. They are part of the Bean House.
Yes.
They have over 125,000 followers on Instagram, which is about 124,000 more than I have. Mm-hmm. So if you are looking to make your fur baby the next Instagram star, Hillary definitely has some things that you're going to want to hear. So let's go right into it with this great interview with Hillary. So, Hillary, your Instagram following for Ella Bean the dog, at Ella Bean the dog, is massive. And I think a lot of people out there would be really interested to know how Ella became such a influential influencer.
Well, first, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm really, really excited to be here. And I always love talking about my dogs, and I could just talk about them to anyone who will listen all day long. Second, I don't know if I'd call our following massive, because when you're in this space, like, I think that you look at you're always looking at people who have, you know, that next level of like 250,000, 500,000, a million followers. So you're always looking at them and wondering, like, when, if, how you might get there. But I will say I didn't set out to gain a following when I started the account. I mostly was trying to understand what it was to be an influencer, having a lot to do with my job that I was at the time, and to understand what went into content creation and brand partnerships and that kind of thing. So the original sort of concept behind the Instagram was to make Ella be this like fabulous jet-setting blogger with no concept that she was actually a dog. And things have really evolved, and it's a very different platform than it was when we started. But that angle at that time really worked for us, and it was funny. And how did we, the way that we got our following was, well, number one, I think this account is 5 or 6 years old at this point. And number one, it was just so much easier to grow on Instagram back then. And number two, we had a lot of support from, frankly, our local New York dog friends. So Katie Storino, who is behind Toast Meets World now at Dog Meets World, and RIP Toast, we love you. Actually, like, before I knew her, we had never met in person, had put out a call for people to share their story if they had a puppy mill dog, to talk about that story and send a picture. And unbeknownst to me, a few weeks later, all of a sudden, she shared Ella and tagged us, and like, it was just off from there. And then from that point, it started just growing sort of on its own. And then there were, you know, regrams from large accounts that really boosted our following. But the big thing was that I had done a very small interview that I thought nothing of, never thought about it again. And one day woke up and the New York Post had done a full page article about my dog with photos. and like they did not talk to me, like they didn't reach out. It just was in the New York Post. Yeah, I was, so I didn't know. I woke up in the morning and my phone was like exploding. This is before like we all turned off notifications and we're too cool for our notifications now. So my phone is like exploding. And between people sharing this digital, like the online article with me, people sending me screenshots of their New York Post or like photos of if they had a physical copy, like I did not know what I was getting into. And that was when things really, really skyrocketed. So that's sort of the gist of how we got our following.
So what is it like on a daily basis? Are you doing shoots all the time? Is that more of like an orchestrated thing? Or are you capturing stuff like, oh, this is so cute. Wait, let me get my camera.
I think, you know, at the beginning, and really, I think for the first like 2 years, everything was really planned and orchestrated. And then like life just sort of happened. And I had broken my arm, which like put a wrench in things, and then COVID. Like, I mean, it's just been like a series of things over the last few years. And the account also now has Coconut and Fifi as part of it, as part of this story, who are the rescues that we've sort of adopted along this journey. And they are not as into the posing as Ella is. Like, Ella knows what to do the minute you whip out your phone, like, or a camera. She just, like, knows it's working time. Coconut and Fifi have not made that mental connection yet that, like, will pay you for photos and treats. Like, we're not asking for you to do this for free. Like, you want a Cheerio, you're going to get a Cheerio. If you want, like, you know, some freeze-dried meat, like we'll make it happen, but we pay for photos, and they just have not made that connection. So maybe someday. So right now, I think the account, especially with not being able to leave the house much, has become much more, look what's happening and is cute in my house today.
Yeah, totally. That makes sense.
How difficult is it to get your dog repped?
I think it's pretty difficult. I think that like, it's not just about follower count. It's also engagement. And it wasn't the case when I first signed with a manager, but now dogs with 120, 150,000 followers are a dime a dozen. So you have to have something really special and unique in order to make it worth it for the talent to want to consider. I've been with this management agency for years and years, back when we had like 50. So I think, you know, essentially, it's hard. It's not easy. It's a competitive world out there in the world of Instagram dogs.
With dogs in general, I remember when I first moved to LA, you know, my background is in animal training. So I moved out to LA and I have a yellow lab named Callie. And I thought, well, I'm going to go get her an agent. She's the most beautiful thing that was ever created. This should be easy. These agents were, first of all, the fact that I went and saw more than one agent is ridiculous for my dog, but I went and they were all like, yeah, we don't really have a need for that type of look. And I go, excuse you.
Yeah.
They were really that nonchalant about it. And they were like, she's too pretty. She needs to look like she's had a rough life. She needs to look like she's lived in the streets. And you know, that's really what's booking these days. Not this like beautiful, you know, all white dog. I was like, okay, well, you know, bye.
Allison, I feel like Peaches is ready to go to become the next influencer.
You know, she would love to, but she doesn't do things on command either. So,
well, but she's got Stay down in that little corner of hers.
She's got Stay and like, oh gosh, I feel so bad. Like you said, like sometimes your dog, when you say ears, will get it and go whoop. And like, I know what makes Peach's ears go up, but I don't want to say it unless we're actually going on a walk, you know? Because that feels mean. Yeah. That feels mean to bait that kind of thing.
Also, I'll tell you, they get wise to it. Like, if you start using it and don't deliver on the goods, man, like, treat has lost all meaning in this because I don't always deliver. And they know.
Look, I had dreams of Callie becoming Ella Bean. I really did. I had the Instagram. I still do. You know, she has a whopping 700 followers on there.
Whoa,
what? Not bad.
What are people? You guys are so nice. What are people to do in this new world to get their dogs famous on Instagram? I know it's harder, but is there an algorithm hack? Is it a hashtag thing? Is it collaborations? Help me out.
Oh man, if I had an answer to that, I'd have a million followers, wouldn't I?
But you got 125,000, which is 124,000 more than Callie.
It sounded like the shares from other people's accounts are what really helped you, right?
It doesn't anymore. Yeah, not anymore. Sort of thing just doesn't help anymore in the way that it used to. I think the main thing to know is that content is king. Like at the end of the day, people follow for excellent content. And the reason my following hasn't grown is because my content hasn't been amazing. I mean,
I'm looking at it and it looks great.
I mean, thank you so much. But like, I think that when I look at, there's a handful of accounts that have sprung up even in the last, you know, year who've like exploded. And when I look at them, there's, you know, two things. Content is king. Like how clever is this content? How much does it resonate with people? And then the second thing is that I think social media is sort of a reflection of what's happening outside Instagram and Facebook and other social platforms, not inside. So to come back to what I said at the beginning, our following really picked up with the New York Post article. So right. It's like press is what moves the needle. And so if you are in an industry where you can get your dog a lot of press, if you can get Callie like a write-up somewhere about something special that she's doing in a widely distributed publication, whether that's digital or print, I promise you that will get your following up.
Yeah. But sorry, like, exactly. Allison, what were you going to say?
Well, I just want to make it clear that like, there's a huge difference between having big aspirations for your dog and having that be like your main motive in it. And Ella Bean just has such a sweet story. And I just wanted to talk about that for a second. She's a puppy mill rescue. She has no teeth. right?
Not a single tooth.
Was that an after effect of the puppy mill, or was that like a birth defect? And yeah, could you just tell our listeners a little bit about...
Absolutely. Sure. Thanks. Let's talk about Ella's mouth a little bit. So I rescued Ella when she was pretty young. But one thing that had happened was she had retained her baby teeth. And so she had two rows of teeth on the top and the bottom. And it caused her adult teeth to come in really, really, like, in really bad shape. So, like, she had... The first thing that I did when she was well enough and strong enough and had filled out a little and was to get those baby teeth removed to try and in hopes that like the adult teeth would sort of normalize. But the dentist that I had worked with originally was like, I don't know. I don't think this doesn't bode well for the future here. Just hang on to her teeth for what you need. And it sort of became a running joke that like dogs have like 40 teeth and she would get like 10 removed. I think it's 40, 42. I can't remember. Don't quote me on that. She would get like 10 removed every year because they'd be just like, there was crowding issues or they'd get loose. And like some of this is small dog stuff that happens with all small dogs that when you try and cram that many teeth into a teeny tiny mouth, there's going to be issues. But hers was definitely exacerbated by the fact that she had been left in a cage through, you know, becoming a puppy to growing up a little bit more and nobody had taken care of those teeth and that had been neglected. So she didn't have the opportunity to have as healthy a mouth as possible.
One thing you're using your platform for, Hillary, is to stop puppy mills. And I would love for you to speak on how listeners can support you on this mission or do their own advocacy work in this space.
Absolutely. Well, the best thing that anyone can do is not buy from a puppy mill, or if you have purchased a dog that you think may come from a puppy mill, be open and honest about that and share with people why you wouldn't do it again. And I think that's a very important thing that we can all do is share with our friends and family, share with people you know who are thinking about buying a dog on what it looks like to rescue or find a dog from a reputable breeder. Those are the most important things that any of us can do is that one-on-one advocacy. But from a larger scale, these issues are actually one thing I've come to learn the longer I've been involved is that these are actually like legislative issues, not necessarily about activism and the sort of the sense of it's not all protesting outside of pet stores that helps, and that's important, and it can generate press, and I'm not saying that people shouldn't do those things. They absolutely should. But this is really why it's so important to vote, and why it's so important to think about the kind of people that you're voting into office and looking at their records in terms of animal rights issues. Because people who are elected officials care about what their constituents care about. And if you want to elect people who reflect those same values in terms of animal rights, and then you want to be a vocal advocate and, you know, be writing to your legislators. It's like, I mean, honestly, one thing I've learned is it's the boring stuff that's the most impactful. Getting your neighbors and your friends and all of your followers to write letters to their legislators, helping people even just understand the systems of government at a local level is like mind-bogglingly complicated, and helping them find the right people to write to, which, if you're curious, the people who are going to have the most impact are going to be like your local state reps, not the people who are going to like the House and the Senate in DC. You want to look at your local House, your local Senate, not DC. So those are the people who can help with those kinds of things, but start small. Think about like mayors of towns, which sometimes that can be like big places and too big, but any elected official who you think might be friendly to the cause is a great place to start, and a great place to direct letter writing campaigns, and be specific about your ask, when you are writing them, and make sure to include your address and where you live and that you're a constituent of that area. Like these things sound so small, but they make a big difference. If enough letters come in about an issue, they take notice, and you can certainly send off emails, but the handwritten letter, like old fashioned pen and paper, really does make a difference, because those legislators know you're sitting down to do this, and it's not something people do anymore. So it's even more powerful.
Well, I don't even think those sound small, because today's advocacy is using a hashtag and then going about your day. And that is small, okay? Just because you Fair. Put a hashtag on your Twitter post does not make you an advocate. It makes you a Twitter user. So I think if someone took the time to sit down and write a letter, that is a huge step. I'd be like, dang, step. Good for you. Like, you are yeah. really putting in the work here, you know?
I have so much gratitude for all of the letter writers that we've found along the way, and people who've given me opportunities to like literally sit at events with like a little booth where I like tell people about the issue and make them fill out a postcard in front of me and figure out who their legislators are, because those things, although it sounds silly, like it makes such a difference.
So for any aspiring pet influencers out there, do you have any tips? I know the world is a little different now, especially with coronavirus and everything, but.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the main thing, the most important thing, is to make sure that your pet is okay with it, and is having fun, and, you know, don't do as I say, not as I do. Feed your pet treats when they give you what you want. Pay them for their work. Make sure that everything is on the up and up in terms of your pet's well-being and enjoyment of the experience. That's the first most important thing, I think. And I think it really does come through in the photos. You can tell when they're like
totally.
Not happy.
Yeah.
And people don't want to look at unhappy animals. They want like joy. Like that yeah. is what they want. I also think that like leaning into what's unique about your pet and their unique personalities, that's something we've really leaned into in our account. It's been really successful for us. Like, Ella, like, we're not making it up. She's a straight up diva. Like, you will find her on the highest surface she can get on. She tries to like get above you because she wants to assert her. She's incredibly dominant. She prefers bottled water to tap water.
And oh will, like, man, that's amazing.
Literally refuse tap water over and over. And actually some bottled water she's not so into. We were in Paris with her last summer and it was very hot and she was refusing to drink whatever water we had. And we got back to the hotel and I have to do it, and cracked open an expensive bottle of water from the under the hotel fridge, whatever that's called, and poured it into her bowl. And sure enough, she's lapping it right up. So, and then Coconut is like a total weirdo. And she's just a strange animal, but she's so sweet. So we lean into like her stranger qualities, and Fifi will cut you. Like she will she's terrifying when she wants to be. So leaning into your pet's true personality and not putting a personality on them that you wish they had. I think being like, we all do it. We all know who our pets are. We know what quirks and our those funny things about them, and sharing that and leaning into that, I think really helps people connect and can drive a following. Photo quality is less important than it used to be. It used to be really important to have like these clear, beautiful photos. I think that it's not as important as it was, but making sure that the animal, it is like in focus is important.
And well lit. Yeah.
And relatively well lit at least. And I think that, you know, some of this is also about community. So like if you have a dog who's a mixed breed or a rescue, like being a part of the rescue community where you live, and if you have a pet that's a certain breed, leaning into that breed's community on these social channels, I think can help grow your following, because you're speaking to people who care about the same things as you, mm-hmm. and that can help get things off the ground. Those are the three things that I think I would say.
I love that.
Don't know. Good.
Yeah, it's always better to amplify the natural beauty of anything than it is to try and create a facade of it.
Yeah.
That's what I tell myself in the mirror every morning before I start my day.
Same.
Kyle, amplify your natural beauty. Hillary, this has been so wonderful. At Ella Bean the dog. And where can they find you, or do they find you through your dogs?
I try and stay pretty hidden, so they can find me at Ella Bean the dog, and if they search deep enough, they might be able to find a whiff of who I am.
Ooh.
But this is not, I try and make sure that the platform is not about me. Cause it's not, it's about rescue. It's about rescue stories. And we have three very different dogs with three very different rescue stories that, yes, they all started in puppy mills, but they've all ended. Not ended, hopefully no one ends soon, but they continue on in their, you know, as their lives, you know, change and they evolve. And I think that, yeah, I think that me a human, nobody needs that.
I love that. Well, make sure you go follow Ella Bean the dog on Instagram, and you can also check out her friends Coconut and Fifi. And while you're there, check out The Pet Collective at The Pet Collective for daily doses of more doggy and pet fun. Hillary, thanks for being here, and hopefully
thank you so much. Yeah, really appreciate the insight.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. You guys are a lot of fun.
All right. Thank you to Hillary Sloan for that wonderful interview on pet influencers. Now, we do have a special little treat today. We sat down earlier with the Pet Collective's own online personality and pet enthusiast, Georgie. A lot of you may already know her if you follow us on social media. She's going to give us some behind the scenes info on the Pet Collective, how you can get involved, and a bunch more fun stuff. So let's jump on over to that interview right now with Georgie.
Welcome to the Pet Collective fam.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Would you just tell us what you do for the Pet Collective for those who aren't familiar?
Yes. I am the producer and host for the Pet Collective, which means I do a lot on camera and off camera for the brand. I host The Scoop and another satirical clip show called Do Do's and Don't Don'ts. And I also work with our APs who curate our comps and UGC, which is user-generated content. So submissions from other pet parents, and we come up with like fun shows around that. So like Pets Are Jerks or Pets Translated. So it's a lot of fun creation. And then also like in the field, I do the hosting stuff, like going to PetCon and pet events, but also it's pet lifestyle stuff, you know, like how does CBD work on my dog, and sort of just being an all-encompassing creative human for the brand through the eyes of someone that is not an expert. I'm just a pet parent like everybody else.
I love that. Well, I know our channels are really massive, but how big is our audience when you put them all together?
It's pretty crazy. So I'm gonna have to refer to my notes because it's like insane. So we average almost 300 million views across social platforms per month.
Dang.
Wow. So that's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, the whole shebang. And then we have 37 million followers across all of our social platforms. And then we reach 181 million people per month. And then average 107 minutes watched each month. So a lot of people love a lot of pets.
107 million minutes.
Yes.
To clarify. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is really impressive. I'm not too surprised because, like you said, people love their pets. And I'm constantly watching and absorbing content, whether it's just for fun or more practical to learn how to be a better pet parent.
Yes, that's exactly what we do. And 100 of those 107 million minutes are definitely me.
Are you? Yes, of course. Yes.
Watching our content.
It's you and Mops, your doggy, and you and Beans, your kitty cat.
Beans loves to watch himself, but he refuses to watch Mops. There's a whole
rivalry going on.
Right, yeah.
A sibling rivalry happening.
Tale as old as time.
What do you think has contributed most to growing your following?
So the Pet Collective as a whole, it's definitely the videos that we get sent to us or that we curate, right, from other pet parents. And we've created content out of that. And it's quality content. It's stuff that everybody wants to watch. Everybody wants to watch emotional pet content is the biggest thing. Does it make me laugh? Does it make me cry? Is it, super weird and silly? I think for us, when it comes to pets and pet parenting, it's all about humor for the most part.
Okay.
But the following definitely comes from consistently posting and also just really engaging with our pet community. We really have what feels like a community across social media, and it's such a positive one. You know, there's so much stuff on the internet these days that is controversial or, you know,
there is. I haven't seen any of that. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
no, you're so lucky.
It really does cross all demographics because everybody loves pets. Everybody loves seeing pet videos since the internet's beginnings. You know, we love seeing pets.
Mm-hmm. And
we relate to them more than humans in some ways. So I think it's also just joining the conversation as well when it's necessary when it comes to pet parenting. And that's kind of where we're going. So where we came from was funny pet videos. What we're transitioning to is more pet parenting lifestyle. So marrying the two.
Well, it's been really, I know I'm relatively new with the Pet Collective, and when we got into this world, into this culture and community, as you put it, it was very clear that these were my people. You know, I'm like, okay, the people who are following this, engaging with this content, absorbing this content are the people that I am around in real life too. So it was nice to find the social part of that. What are some of the best practices? Because if we're pet parents, we're on social media because we love bragging about our dogs. So what would you suggest that they do to optimize their content for social media and really see more engagement with the stuff that they post?
So if you are looking to be a pet influencer, I feel like there's like a few different categories of pet influencer or having just an Instagram, a fun Instagram account for your pet, which so many people have, but they're not necessarily looking to be a pet influencer. So if you're looking to be a pet influencer, it's a lot of, again, like consistently posting, paying attention to your copy, keeping your copy short, engaging with your audience, you know, replying to comments, following people back. But if you're just that's one part of, you know, the technical aspect, I guess, of growing a following and engaging with audience. But for me, the biggest thing that I see that really, really works is you're a storyteller for your pet. your pet is a character. And I think the most fun accounts to follow have such a specific point of view for their pets and really do turn them into a character that we're following. So it depends on what your style is. You know, there's like Popeye the Foodie, and he just goes, his, you know, pet parent takes him around and takes him to different places to try food, and it's cute photos, and cute photos are amazing, but I think copy is what really sets pet influencers apart that grow a massive following. If you look at Marnie the dog,
R.I.P.
I know. So clearly in her point of view, because the language used in the copy is so specific to Marnie's journey and what Marnie sees, and it's hilarious. So, you know, you can absolutely post cute pictures of your pet and say, like, this is what we did today. And that's great. If that's what you get joy out of, awesome. But I think if you really want to go the extra mile, you should really think about, you know, your pet's personality and point of view, and go from there. And that's where the real fun is, in my opinion, giving them a voice where they don't necessarily have one. But you know what it is. Everybody knows.
You really do.
Pet's voice is
totally.
Yes. We talk to them in that voice. All of us do it.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the most fun is, in my opinion, and from what I've seen.
So how does the Pet Collective go about finding and choosing which content it shows the world?
Yes. Great question. So we have an amazing team of people in our acquisitions team, and they're either scouring the internet, all depths of the internet, to find great content before it goes viral, or we also take submissions. And that's one of the biggest aspects of it, is you can submit to the Pet Collective and we review that content. And I would say, if you are submitting or interested in submitting, you'd be surprised at what we find to be great content. And the biggest factor is emotional. You know, what does it inspire? Is it funny? Is it cute? Is it heartwarming? We kind of really love edgier stuff, though. You know, we love it when your pet is being a jerk. It's funny. And you'd be surprised at what, you know, like short clips that go viral. And also just, you know, unique stuff. Right? Like, we had a clip where there was a little boy, a little cowboy kid, and he, you know, went with his dog to go, I think, feed their horses or something. And it's this like 1 minute long clip that you can't take your eyes away from, because it's this like 3-year-old cowboy with this puppy, and they're like driving on this little, like,
I saw that clip.
Yeah. It's
it was so cute.
So cute, and you just want to, like, Mary Poppins yourself into it. You just want to
Mary Poppins yourself,
part
yes.
of that world. And it's got, pets are the best. They're such an incredible form of escapism and reminding us of empathy and joy. And that's the best part of the Pet Collective. Like, the whole community is there for joy. That's
yes.
You know, we're not there for controversy. Yeah. That's the best part of it.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the Pet Collective community for doing everything that you do and being such a voice for not only the pet parents out there, but of course the pets. Thank you so much. This was so wonderful, Georgie.
Thank you, guys. I can't wait to hear more of this podcast.
All right. Thank you so, so much to Georgie for stopping by. She's always so much fun. And if you enjoyed that, definitely check out our online series, The Scoop, on Facebook for some awesome pet videos hosted by, yes, Georgie. That can be found at The Pet Collective. All right, Allison, get us out of here.
We do this every week, and we want to hear your questions. So send them to us, and we'll answer them on the show. You can reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, at The Pet Collective. Or if you want to find me or Kyle, find me or Kyle. I'm on Instagram, at Allison Seeky. Kyle?
I'm on Instagram as at Kyle Kittleson.
Awesome. Oh, and don't forget to check out the Pet Collective store at petcollective.shop. That's petcollective.shop. We got tons of amazing things for you to dress up your little babies in. All right, guys, we'll see you next week. Bye. Bye.
The Pet Collective Podcast is produced by Jukin Media and The Pet Collective. Head producer, Anosh McAdam. Associate producer, Brandon Kendall. And our original score is composed by Corey Celeste.